I'd like to welcome you to the session on genomics for surgeons, a review of applications for breast, lung, gastrointestinal, and pediatric cancers. And if that is not the title that you want, you're in the wrong room. So I'm Harvey Pass. I'm a thoracic surgeon in New York, and my co-moderator is the Ann Dyson Associate Professor of Surgery at Harvard and the head of the breast surgery service at Brigham, Terry King. And we have an exciting and relevant program for you today in which we're going to try and educate us as the moderators and the audience on the genomics in practices in general surgery. We're going to move right along. I just want to remind the speakers that we've got 12 minutes, and I'm going to introduce them for 1 minute, and so is Terry. So we have a full session, so we really need to keep on time. Our first speaker is Genevieve Boland, who is an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School and director of the Melanoma Surgery Program at Massachusetts General Hospital. The primary focus is melanoma and cutaneous oncology. She completed her PhD at the NIH, focusing on signaling pathways in adult human mesenchymal stem cells. She's a cum laude and AOA graduate of the Thomas Jefferson University. She completed her general surgery training at Mass General, followed by a clinical and research fellowship at the MD Anderson Hospital. She is a Society of Surgical Oncology Clinical Investigator and Director of the Clinic Surgical Oncology Research Laboratory and Associate Member of the Broad at MIT and Harvard. She opens our panel discussion with Genomics for Surgeons, an overview of relevant molecular biology platforms. Genevieve.
Thank you for the warm introduction. Thank you for being here. I will apologize in advance if this is a little too basic, but I thought that there's going to be a lot of complexity and sophistication coming in the upcoming talks, and so I just wanted to keep it simple and make sure we were all on the same page in terms of the language we're using and the goals of these testing modalities. These are some of my disclosures, including a Novartis-sponsored lecture tomorrow morning on melanoma if anyone's interested in coming. So again, this is Omics 101. We're going to keep it basic. So we're going to talk a little bit about the blueprints of the cells, the DNA, and this field, this expanding field of genomics. We're going to talk very briefly about epigenomics, but how that DNA folding and the actual mechanics of unraveling the DNA impact gene expression. We're going to talk a little bit about transcriptomics, which is a more dynamic regulation of cell processes, and touch briefly upon proteomics. So again, starting with the basics, when we think about the genome, we're talking about all DNA in an organism or in a sample, per se. This includes coding DNA that results in transcription and ultimately protein expression, as well as non-coding DNA, which is often regulatory strands. This is sort of the dark matter of the genomics world that's not as well characterized, but has a lot of regulatory functions. This also includes mitochondrial DNA. So we're thinking about all the DNA that's in the nucleus, but actually when you sequence these samples, you're getting mitochondrial DNA as well. So when you think of genetics, you're thinking about the study of an individual gene or how alterations in that gene impacts function. When we're talking about genomics, we're at the 30,000-foot view. We're talking about collective characterization and quantification of genes across the genome. And I really think what has allowed this field to explode in the more recent past has been the use of high-throughput DNA sequencing, which I'm going to talk about a little bit, and this expanding field of computational biology and bioinformatics that has allowed us really to deconvolve or make sense of these massive amounts of data that we're now generating. So to start here, and again, the DNA is the blueprint or the foundation of, the cells and the cell behaviors. In my training lifespan, what has changed is the implementation of next-generation sequencing. So we can massively parallel or deep sequencing. And this has revolutionized genetic sequencing and allowed us to do this much faster. So when I was doing my PhD, the Human Genome Project was ongoing, and people were using Sanger sequencing, where nucleotides were added during DNA replication. And so basically, if you think about DNA as this very tightly coiled material, you stretch it out, it's very long. So to do this piece by piece is going to take an incredibly long period of time. And what people realize is that if we were smart and we just cut the genome into a bunch of different pieces and we sequence them in parallel, hence the massively parallel sequencing name, we could make more sense of this. And so this is What we do, as you can see here, these are, you know, the DNA or the genetic material. It's cut into these little pieces, and all these pieces are much easier to sequence. They can be sequenced at the same time, but then you rely on computational tools to put this back together and infer from all these little pieces what the DNA looked like to begin with. So it's no small feat, but there's a whole field of, you know, both computation and technology evolution that's allowed us now to do this. And again, this may be very, very, very basic, but I just want to touch on this quickly, that, you know, what the source of the material is that you're sequencing is going to impact the conclusions that you make and the questions that you ask. And again, this is just a revisit, a very basic term, but, you know, germline mutations are mutations that exist in the egg or the sperm, that exist in every single cell in the body and that are heritable to the next generation. So think of BRCA mutations or Lynch syndrome. So you will test different tissue to look at germline mutations than you would to look at somatic mutations or mutations that occur over time in a select subpopulation of cells. And in this context, what we're talking about is in a cancer. And these are very different because these are potentially actionable. You can actually target these without treating every single cell in the body. So when you think about the questions you want to ask, the tools you want to use, that's going to inform some of these choices. And one other thing I wanted to mention is there's a lot of mutations that are occurring all the time. Every time the cells replicate, there's mutations that are acquired. And many of these are what we call passenger mutations. They're mutations that are accumulated that are specific to subpopulations of these cells. You can think about them like the fingerprint of the tumor, but they're not directly causal for tumor pathogenesis. So they're not a good drug target. They're just passenger mutations, but they can be used, for example, circulating tumor DNA in the blood to identify DNA that's coming from tumors. Now, driver mutations are actually responsible for the activity or the tumorigenic potential of the cells, and these are the kind of things you want to target with a drug because they're directly related to the function of the tumor. And again, there's a lot of words out there that you may come across that are hard to interpret. I like pictures. I think it makes it a lot clearer. So some of the things, SNVs, single nucleotide variants, you can see here on the original DNA an A, and then it transitions to a C. This is a point mutation. One nucleotide is switched. Indels, insertions or deletions, where you lose a little piece of the DNA. You can see that here. Copy number variation, you can either have copy number gains, you can lose an allele or half of the DNA material, you can have a homozygous deletion where all of it is lost. And this is just, you know, terminology you will encounter, and these are the kind of things we want all the platforms to be able to assess. And then gene rearrangements, when you take one chromosome and a piece of another chromosome and they stick together and have altered function and or are pathognomonic for specific diseases. So these are the kind of things that these sequencing platforms are looking for and will have different significance in different contexts. So this picture on the right is a little old because very rarely, although we still do, we can do single gene testing. So if you know that there's a specific driver mutation that's really important for your cancer in melanoma, BRAF V600E, potentially, you can use PCR or even Sanger sequencing to look, interrogate specifically for that mutation. What we've found more and more is that with next-generation sequencing and decreasing of the costs of these studies or tests and the rapidity that we can get the answers, we're leaning more and more towards panel testing where you can test multiple genes at the same time. And coming back to what I was talking before, what tissue you're checking, if you're looking for heritable syndromes or genetic predispositions to certain types of cancer, you want to test germline, so normal tissue in the patient, versus if you have a specific cancer you're interested, you can do a smaller gene panel, specifically looking at mutations known to be associated with that cancer. Or more and more, I think many institutions are using comprehensive cancer risk panels, greater than 25, but up to hundreds of genes at a time, looking at actionable driver mutations that span a wide variety of cancers. And this becomes more relevant as we think about basket trials, so assigning patients to therapies based upon their mutations, not necessarily upon the histopathology of their tumor. Another technique we use very commonly is fluorescent in situ hybridization. This is actually probes for different parts of the chromosome. The nice picture here, you can see this is one chromosome, this is another. And for BCR-ABLE gene fusion, you can see the colors are lined up. So these are just other visualization tools and tools in our armamentarium to start looking at some of these changes. For the sake of time, I'm going to skip talking about epigenomics because we're not really using that clinically yet. I think there are, we're HDAC inhibitors, there are some specific therapies targeted at the epigenome, but in terms of the molecular testing we're using for patients, it's not quite ready for prime time yet. The thing that's really cool about epigenetics is unlike the blueprint of the cell, what's pretty fixed and it can slowly evolve and mutate over time, epigenetic changes are potentially reversible in a relatively short period of time, but can impact the coiling and uncoiling of the DNA, which is wrapped around around these little histones and then packaged and really facilitate gene expression. And so this is a huge area of interest, I think, broadly, and something you're going to be hearing more about. And there's things we're using in the research world, things like ATAC-seq, where we can look at open chromatin and really start to characterize in a given cell its same genetic material, but what genes are actually being transcribed because the chromatin is open and available. And again, not yet being used clinically as far as I'm aware, but these are things that we're looking to in the future. So if DNA is the blueprint, you know, the transcriptome or the RNA that's expressed from the DNA is then the building blocks for implementing the cellular plan. I won't go into the weeds of exons, which is a transcribed messenger RNA precursor versus the introns that are cut out, but more just to say that the transcriptomic profile of a cell gives you a much shorter and more dynamic readout of what's actually being expressed. You can have the same DNA, but the cells can be doing very different things. So the transcriptome gives us another level of awareness and a more dynamic readout of what's going on. And then finally, there's plenty of platforms for proteomics. This is just a large-scale study of proteins across a sample. It can be used, in the blood. It can be used from tissue. And we're looking at the translated protein. So again, at each level of control, from the genome to the transcriptome to the proteome, there's levels of regulation, so not all proteins are expressed, despite whether there's an mRNA there or not. And there's protein modifications, like phosphorylations, that can show the activation state of certain pathways. And there are a variety of tools being used, including antibody-mediated capture, so tools that have a repertoire of antibodies that can query a sample for these different proteins, including RPPA, which is up to about 400 proteins at once, or an unbiased approach where you use mass spec, but this requires a lot of computational deconvolution on the tail end. And so finally, I just wanted to again touch on this idea of what the source of material is. We can look at, in cancer, we can look at the tumor itself from a variety of sources. We can look in the blood and infer tumor biology from circulating tumor DNA, from RNA and extracellular vesicles, from circulating tumor cells. And we want to look at and characterize these acquired somatic mutations. But the background of that is some sort of normal tissue, can be blood or paired normal, where we can then inform the germline versus the somatic changes. So if in a normal sample and a tumor sample you see the same mutations, you can infer that that's probably a germline mutation versus something that's acquired and selective only to the tumor. And again, why that matters is we're not just talking about risk stratification, but actionable mutations, and you don't want to target a mutation that's present in every cell of the body. So I think as you move forward, these are very simple concepts, but they're helpful to keep in mind because you'll hear a lot of names and genes thrown around, but I think just sort of contextualizing it is somewhat helpful. So in summary, I've definitely been swept up in the omics revolution. I think it is a revolution and has really incredibly changed our ability to understand tumors more broadly. Again, a lot of what we're using clinically are focused on actionable or druggable targets or those with diagnostic relevance to tell the difference between a dedifferentiated sarcoma or melanoma. In the research environment, we're expanding this rapidly. We're doing all kinds of new techniques. And I just wanted to drive home that it's more than just genomics. All of these other levels of control and gene expression are very important. And then keep in mind the question you want to ask and which assay you use to address that. So thank you.